plate a potential nugget.
I was just smiling as you made the last point because my father was a public sector banker.
Yeah.
And my father-in-law was a brigadier in the Indian Army.
Uh-huh.
So talking about cultural differences, I was just sort of smiling to myself.
I can only imagine.
But back to the first transition, Jennifer, you speak about a few decoys in this context, mm-hmm. right, that some couples fall into. One, you say, is relying on economic decision criteria. We briefly spoke about it. You also talk about a couple of other things, focusing on the short term, concentrating on the practical and striving to do it all.
Yeah.
Give us a sense of the key insight here.
Yeah. So we know that we all of us humans have a short-term decision bias. So we tend to evaluate options based on, are they good for me now? Versus are they good for me in a year, 2 years, 5 years time? And particularly in our first transition, when we naturally have a bit less life experience, couples tend to look at decisions based on, are they good for us now? So let me give you a classic example. And we were talking a little bit before we turned the podcast on about maternity leave, you know. Uh-huh. So one of the options we can think of is, you know, what is good for us as a family right now in terms of childcare, in terms of maternity leave, in terms of length of maternity leave and things like this, without considering the consequences of those choices in not even in the long term, but in the medium term. So we know, for example, most women do want a maternity leave, of course, to spend time with their precious new babies. And most men also want a paternity leave as well. But we also know that once we take extended paternity or maternity leaves, that has real serious career consequences. Now, some people are very happy to pay the price of those consequences, and that's great, that's their choice. But many people are just not really thinking through what those consequences might be. So take decisions that look like they work now, but then long term have these impacts, not just on their salary trajectory, but can I get to the next level in the organization? And so what looks like it works now, even in 2-3 years time, suddenly becomes a major regret. So that's the idea of short-term decision-making. The idea of focusing on the practicalities is a little bit related to the financial decision, but it's also about logistics, you know, childcare, healthcare, all these sort of things. When couples get too much into these practicalities, financial or otherwise, they forget to talk about what's really underneath, right? Why are we in it together? What do we want out of life? How are we going to support each other? And so many couples I spoke to would say to me, you know, we've synced our calendars and we have this Excel spreadsheet that shows how we're going to divide up all the tasks, and it's still not working. And it's not working because those practical things at the end of the day, they're not the issue. The issue
it's
is
efficient but not effective.
Exactly.
Right, one of those things.
If you as a couple can figure out what you really want and how you can support each other to get there, the practicalities will sort themselves out. You know, every couple struggles with practicalities at one point in time, but the practicalities are not the root of the problem. And this is a classic trap in the first transition because it's the first time when we really struggle with something, right? Things aren't working. And most of us are quite problem-solving people, and we immediately go to those practicalities, but they're not the root of the issue. And the final thing, doing it all, is if we think back to those early days of our relationship when maybe we've not got children who are dependent on us, our parents aren't dependent on us, we're really free agents. In those days, we can have it all. You know, there's all this debate, can you have it all? But the reality is, in our early careers, we probably can, right? We can have our career, we can travel, we can have a nice relationship. You know, we have enough money just about to do what we want to do. But that doesn't last forever. You know, once the responsibilities pile up, we cannot have it all. But that imprinting, if you like, from early in our lives makes us think we should be able to have it all forever. And therefore, we just try and do it all. And this just leads to burnout. And this is a classic thing that happens after the first child, right? We want to just add the child on top of everything else we've done. So not only do we want this great career and great relationships and circles of friends, and we want to travel at weekends, but now we also want to be perfect parents and our children to be great as well. Well, those things don't all sit well together. But by trying to keep all these balls in the air and doing it all, of course, we burn out and lots of conflicts come in our relationships and our careers suffer as well.
I like what Jennifer says here. She says that we often want to have it all and add having a child on top of everything else we have going on in our lives. Something very similar came up in my conversation with Matt Dixon, a triathlon coach in Silicon Valley. He works with several time-starved executives. And in my conversation, one of the questions I asked him was, how do these busy leaders layer on exercise on top of everything else they have going on in their lives? And this is what he said.
You're taking something like training or sport or whatever it might be, and you're dumping it on top of life. So, and that will always yield failure. It would always yield underperformance, the accumulation of stress and fatigue. And so the biggest mistake that we see people make is to think, I know I need to exercise because I know that's something to do that makes me really healthy. So how am I going to just add this on top of life? And many people, what they do, and a great example is, oh, it's wonderful. I've got a bunch of friends. I'm going to do Ironman Turkey and it sounds wonderful. And they, what does it take to train for that? And it takes 20 hours a week. Goodness me, I don't have 20 hours a week, but there's the training program and that's what I need to do. I'm going to dump it on top of life and I'm just going to have to find a way to cram it in. To be successful and to actually integrate the key components of rejuvenation and recovery, as well as training, what we have to realize is that we have to integrate it into a person's life so that not only can they improve in that discipline, because hopefully they're looking for improvement, but so that it can lift their health, it can lift their performance as a CEO or an executive, and it can help them thrive across all areas of life.
If you want to know more about integrating different domains of life, you might like my conversation with Professor Stuart Friedman of Wharton. He speaks about how we could think about integrating across four domains: self, work, home, and community. The metaphor that comes to mind in this context is like solving a three-piece jigsaw and then having an extra piece. Now, if you have a four-piece jigsaw, then you need to solve the puzzle afresh to get to a meaningful place. Thank you for listening. If you're finding this conversation purposeful, you might also like to tune into my conversation with Herminia Ibarra of London Business School, where we speak about transitions at an individual level, and my chat with Linda Grattan, where we speak about the notion of a 100-year life and the implication of that on transitions.